change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats. We them Tiger Cats, we them Tiger Cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up, cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, I think I can kind of get used to this. It was an ugly win for our Ticats this week, 13-10 in BC. But a win's a win, and they're what, 8-2 now? Ugly, pretty, convincing, unconvincing. I don't care, man. They're getting W's, and that makes me a happy podcaster. What about you?
Yeah, I think we might have to bear with some of these ugly games in the second half of the season. Without Jeremiah Mazzoli at quarterback, this offense just isn't running as well as it used to. So we're going to have to, you know, unless Dane Evans really picks it up, which I think is a possibility, you know, more games, more experience can only equal good things for him. But I think we're going to have to lean on the defense and the special teams in the last half of the season.
Yeah, and I think that what this showed to me is not just how resilient this football team is, because I think we've seen that time and time again with, like, we could list the laundry list of injuries this team has dealt with, either substantial ones such as, you know, like you mentioned, Jeremiah Mazzoli, Sean Thomas Erlington. Now, just earlier today, as we record this on Thursday, we found out Adrian Tracy is going to be out for the season. And the single game ones, Luke Kasker's been nicked up, Brandon Banks missed a game, Chris Van Zyl missed a game. Like, they've had, Riker Matthews has missed a couple of games. They've had some of their big name players not on the field, and they just keep finding a way to win. This team is a couple of ugly quarters against two teams away from being undefeated, quite frankly. They could have just as easily beat the Riders and beat the Owls in the two games they lost, and they could be sitting here at 10-0. And you could be prepping your legs to get shaved, but they're not. They're 8-2. But I think this shows me that this is not about one player or one unit. This is a complete football team. In this one in particular, we saw the offense struggle mightily, and we will talk about that at length in a bit. But we saw the defense step up and be tremendous when it had to be. Timely interceptions, nailing Mike Riley repeatedly. I mean, everyone has hit Mike Riley this year, so that's not a big surprise. But special teams didn't do a ton in this one, you know what I mean? But this sort of script for the Ticats this year, especially once Mazzoli went out, has been kind of get just enough from the offense, and in some cases get a lot, like the 35-point explosion against the Lions a couple weeks ago. But the defense steps up and makes a bunch of plays and doesn't – like, this is a total team effort when it comes to these victories. And I think that shows that the Ticats can do something really special this year. It's not a one-man show as it may have been in years past. This is maybe the most talented roster in the entire CFL, one of the most deep rosters in the entire CFL. And I know a lot of people get caught up in power rankings and this, that, and the other thing. The fact of the matter is, and really the only thing that matters, the Hamilton Tigercats are in first place in East Division, and they're 8-2 heading into Labor Day. I don't give a crap if you want to say they're the ninth best team in the CFL. I don't really care. They're 8-2, and that tells me what type of football team they are. Not any sort of, oh, is it a pretty win? Is it a blow? None of that stuff matters, Mike. They're 8-2. Okay. Done. Like, yeah, that speaks exactly. Volumes.
Yeah. And if you look at the offense, how it's struggled a little bit lately, if that ever starts to pick up with this defense and the special teams, it's going to be pretty darn hard to beat this team.
It's what we saw in week two. It's what we saw in week three. It's what we saw. Like, we've seen the Ticats in previous incarnations, not just this year, but in years past, be able to put it all together and look like the best team in football. You're right. If this offense ever, if Dane Evans really starts to get comfortable in this offense and starts to play like the team thinks he can play, and he's had some moments, but I think in this one, I think we can agree, you know, he had his struggles. And I think that that's something that we should expect from a guy making, what, like his fourth or fifth career start. Like, he's not going to be the polished player that we expect from the other quarterbacks in this league. He's a guy who's just starting out his career. It's the second year in the league, for crying out loud. But you're right. If this team ever gets – the offense ever meets up – it doesn't have to meet up with where the defense is at, but gets to 75-80% of that, the Ticats are going to be blowing teams out.
Yeah, and like you mentioned earlier, it's not like we haven't seen – good things from Dane Evans. We've seen him put together some pretty good games. Up to this point, you know, his yardage was every single game it went up. So a bit of a decline in this one. You know, he had 300 last game or the game before, and then 194 in this game. Only 54% completions and two interceptions. So it was a bit of a drop off, but. You know, he's going up against a team this week that is right for the pick. And, you know, the secondary hasn't been good for the Argonauts. So maybe this is a bounce-back game for him.
And let's not forget, the BC Lions are kind of a desperate team right now. 1-9 after this loss to the Ticats. Like, they were throwing everything. They were going for it on 3rd and 1.5 inside their own 20. They tried that ill-advised, I think, fake punt that just did not work. Like, the Lions were doing everything they could to try to win this football game, and it took until less than a minute left, no, that until they finally scored a touchdown. Like, yes, the offense didn't do much, but even in that, and with Evan's struggles, they did enough to basically, because of the defense, they put enough points on the board to win this game, not convincingly, because a three-point win is never convincing, but, I mean, you kind of look at Evan's performance, and yeah, you're not blown away by it, nor do I think you should be. But if he can have this poor an outing, and the Ticats can still win, I think that says good things about where this team's at right now.
Yeah, and in a game where, you know, your top running back gets 66 yards, so the running game wasn't a huge factor in this as well. And, you know, it's just they haven't been that productive on offense. But you're right. They won this one. It was ugly, but they got the job done 13-10. So I'll take it. Win is a win, especially when you're a Ticat fan.
Speaking of the running game, I want to talk about Cam Marshall because he had that one big run that he seems to have one of those a game is what I'm kind of noticing. He has one run where he'll kick it outside and take it for like 20 some odd yards. I thought he played really well in this one. You mentioned his numbers, just 66 yards, but only had 13 carries. That's over 5 yards per carry. I mean, if your running back's getting 5-plus yards per carry, that hand him the ball twice, he gets first down. That's simplistic math, but that's the way you kind of look at it. You talk in the NFL about guys getting 4 yards per carry. In the CFL, it's 5, 5.5. I'm sort of liking what I'm seeing more and more out of Cameron Marshall, and I feel like the more he's playing, the more comfortable he's getting in the offense. I think losing Sean Thomas Erlington, I think, was a huge blow because I think obviously this offense was tailor-made for him. But I think after, you know, Malik Irons and seeing some Anthony Coombs had 4 carries in this game for 18 yards at a long of 12. So it's like he had a nice run in this one as well. And I think he's a nice change of pace back to use somewhat sparingly. I don't know if he can, you know, carry the full load. But I think Cameron Marshall can, and you were a guy who was really high on Marshall when we signed him and was high on him, hoping to see him get on the field. And now that he's kind of worked his way back from injury, I've liked what I've seen out of him. What about you?
Yeah, I've liked, the game before, I thought he played pretty well. This game, he played pretty damn good. He's a fun guy to watch because you never know what to expect. He could run over a guy. Or like we saw on that 25-yard run, he can outrun some guys too. He's not the fastest guy in the world, but I've liked what I've seen from him. And Anthony Coombs, you know, I think that if Erlington ever gets back this year, Cameron Marshall and him could be a pretty good duo. in the backfield.
Yeah, and like, doesn't it feel like Cameron Marshall is going to have a breakout game? And doesn't he feel like one of those guys that on Labor Day could have like 12 carries for 130 yards and two touchdowns? Like the unsung hero, the guy that no one really talks about, has a big, like, that's what this kind of feels like. It feels like he's due for a massive game sooner or later. And I can think of no better game to do that with than the one coming up on Monday.
Yeah, it just feels like every time he touches the ball, you expect good things to happen. He's been averaging a really good number on his carries in this game, 5.1, and the previous games has been good as well. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what he can do coming up here, especially against the Argonauts, which, you know, with our offensive line, they should be able to open up a lot of holes for this guy.
So a guy that had his breakout game, I think, this week is Jalen Acklin, who will get to the catch. And I think everyone who's listening to this knows exactly what I'm referring to. We'll get to that in a second. But his numbers, 6 catches, 91 yards. I liked what I saw to this kid. He became kind of Dane Evans' go-to guy in this. Led the team in receiving yards. Braylon Addison led the team in receptions with 7. Brandon Banks was kind of an afterthought once again, only 3 catches for 37 yards. But this felt like sort of the coming out story. Not coming out, because that sounds like it. Anyway, like this was the breakout game, I think, for Jalen Acklin, to be quite honest. I think we had heard about him. Do you remember in the beginning of training camp, we heard about him getting into a fist fight with Delvin Bro, or getting in some sort of altercation with Delvin Bro at camp. And we were all like, well, good luck, kid. That rookie getting into it with the all-star DB. Well, see ya. But I mean, obviously the team liked what they saw in him. He'd been given his opportunity. And it seems like every week he gets more and more comfortable. I liked what I saw to Acklin this one. And I think big things are coming for this kid as the season goes on.
I couldn't agree more. And we saw flashes of it last game. But there's 2 big catches on that one drive, the one touchdown catch and then the catch before that. So, you know, we saw some flashes from this kid, and you're right. This was his breakout game. He's a really good receiver. I think he was replacing Luke Tasker in this game, and he did a tremendous job doing it. So I would like, you know, even when Tasker comes back, I'd like for Acklin to stay in the lineup somehow.
What about that catch?
I couldn't believe it when I saw it. The amount of concentration to be able to turn your head around, turn your body around, and grab the ball before it hits the ground, even though, you know, the tip of the ball may have hit the ground, but it was still a legal catch. So it was one of the best catches I've seen all year, to be honest. Maybe, you know, one of the best catches I've seen in the last couple years.
I think there are 2 catches in this game, and one of them's not by a receiver, that could be in the conversation for catch of the year. There was that Brian Burnham catch a couple weeks ago against Ticats, which, I mean, Brian Burnham has catch of the year catches almost every week. But this one by Acklin was, like you said it, like he tips the ball up, he spins, locates the ball as he's falling down, and is able to grab it, and yes, the ball touches the ground, but the ball doesn't move, and the ball is allowed to touch the ground as long as the ground doesn't aid in the catch. I saw a lot of people freaking out online that, oh, it shouldn't be a catch. No, it can touch the ground. That's allowed. It just can't aid in the catch of the ball. It was one of the nicest catches I've ever seen, and for my money, I think catch of the year so far in the CFL.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that. Just the amount of concentration on that catch. You see the diving catches. Greg Ellingson had a nice diving catch in the back of the end zone a couple weeks ago, but it just doesn't compare to this one.
No, not at all. Do you remember when LeBron James, this is a strange reference, but trust me when we get there. When he went to Miami and he said not 1, not 2, not 3, mm-hmm. not 4, not 5, not 6, not 7.
Yes, I remember that. Yeah.
7. 7 sacks, Mike, by the defense in this one. And not just by the defense, but all 7 came courtesy of the defensive line. Mike Riley got the dog mess knocked out of him in this one. And it was all thanks to Julian Hauser, David Dean, Jagarrett Davis, and the big man himself, Dylan Wynn. What a performance by the defensive line in this game.
Yeah, and I remember saying it last week that in the previous game against the BC Lions, we had 4 sacks. And I thought to myself, Yeah, that's a good number, but against that offensive line and that BC Lions offense, we're capable of more, and they brought more in this one. 7 sacks, as you mentioned. It was damn impressive, and it could have been more. I mean, there was pressure on him almost every single play.
Yeah, you got a feel for Mike Riley, just how beat up he's getting this year. They even mentioned it during the broadcast late in the game. He does a quarterback sneak, and the commentators, I think it was Farhan Logji and Matt Dunnigan, are just like, you can hear the anguish kind of in his voice. And he does this quarterback sneak, and he gets the first down, and kind of just lies there. Like, you can just feel how beat up he's getting. But if you look at the sack tally, Mike, 2 Ticats are in the top 2 in sacks. Both Jagera Davis and Dylan Wynn are tied for 2nd in the league with 8 sacks. Charleston Hughes still is in first with 10. I mean, Jagera Davis has been everything as advertised when the Ticats got him from the Calgary Stampeders in free agency. And Dylan Wynn was a guy, if you go back into our archives and listen to our show after Wynn was signed, how bullish we were on his signing. His career total for sacks, Mike, for his not in the season, but in his career, was 8. In 10 games this year, he has matched that career total. The sky's the limit for this guy. What an absolute stud he is. And man, oh man, how great is this defensive line just in general? You lose Adrian Tracy, you lose Jamal Westerman, and they don't miss a friggin' beat.
No, we're 2nd in the league in sack totals, just behind Edmonton. Edmonton has 33. We have 32. But, yeah, you mentioned a guy like Dylan Wynn, and he's an incredible player, but obviously he benefits from all the other talent on this defensive line, as do, you know, Jagera Davis benefits from Dylan Wynn and whatever. But the collection of these guys has just been tremendous to watch. And the depth, like you mentioned, that we lose, you know, one of the best guys on that line, you know, not the best, but a real team player in Adrian Tracy, who has been having a really good year. And we don't miss a beat. We still get 7 sacks on the night. So I've been saying it a lot, but the defensive line and the offensive line are the strengths of this team. And that's where you build from, I think. So, you know, the base is there, and they're just dominating right now.
And Ted Laurent didn't play in this one. He's kind of the linchpin of this defensive line. You know, Davis gets all the attention because he was a big splashy free agent signing. And Wynn is obviously, you know, just out there going pure ham on everybody. But to do this without Ted Laurent, arguably the best Canadian interior defensive lineman in the league and arguably one of the best interior defensive linemen period in the league. Mm-hmm. And they still are able to just absolutely crush Mike Riley. And you got a rookie in David Dean who gets his first sack. And you got Julian Hauser getting in there for a sack. Like, For the defensive line to play this well, missing all that talent, once again speaks to the depth of this Ticats team.
Yep, absolutely. And you can say the same thing about the offensive line with you know, losing players over the last couple of weeks, like Riker Matthews. It just, you know, the sack totals are pretty darn good. We've given up 15 sacks this year. That's 3rd in the league. I can't believe Edmonton's only given up 6. That's insane to me.
That is crazy. But 15.
Yeah.
Mike, 15 sacks. Like, I know earlier in the year we were talking like, man, if these guys can give up like less than a sack a game, we're over that now. Obviously, 15 sacks in 10 games, 1.5. I'll take 1.5 sacks per game for the season, won't you?
Absolutely. Compared to what some of the other teams are doing. Yeah. And what it used to be. Yeah. It was always a big concern of mine, the offensive line, but not at all this year. It's a relief to watch finally a nice clean pocket for our quarterbacks.
I thought the secondary had a really nice game in this one too. You see, you look at Mike Riley. Yes, he did throw for 286 yards, but he was picked off twice. No receiver for the Lions had more than 75 yards, and the one guy that did have 75 yards was Shaq Johnson. So, like, Deron Carter held to 1 yard receiving. Brian Burnham, 3 catches for 20 yards. Like,
yeah,
I mean, if you're telling me you're playing a team that's fielding Deron Carter and Brian Burnham and they combine for 4 catches for 24 yards, I will take that every single week.
Yeah, especially the history that Brian Burnham has had against the Ticats. Yeah, I mean,
Ticat killer.
Yeah, in the last outing, he had an absolute beauty of a game. And in years past, he's really put a beating on the Ticats. To limit him to only three catches is a tremendous job.
And I think this is where we talk about the second catch that I think is up for catch of the year, and that was Richard Leonard's interception in the end zone, the one-handed snag. What went through your head when you saw that pick?
It was like he was like not really trying to catch it. It's like it just fell into his arm. You know, like remember that catch a couple years ago?
The Weston Dressler. Oh, no, not Weston Dressler. The other.
Smith?
What the hell? Who? What? The one you're for Winnipeg, right?
Yeah, for Winnipeg. Against the Tigers, actually.
Yeah,
but it seemed kind of like that. It
yes.
just fell underneath his one arm and he kept his feet in bounds. And it was a thing of beauty. I couldn't believe he came up with that. And it's funny. You know, week to week, you know, we're going back and forth on Richard Leonard. Oh, he had a bad game. And then the next week, he has a really good game. So hopefully he can string some consistency together.
That would be nice, but I'll take that pick. And the two picks, and I think this is important to note, the two picks the Ticats got, the one by Leonard and the one by Rico Murray, both came in the end zone. And in a game that was decided by 3 points or fewer, and in this one, that is the case. 3 points was the margin of victory in this one for the Ticats. Those red zone interceptions are huge. That is, at a minimum, 6 points taken off the board, 6 points added to the Lions total, and, well, I think even our fans can do rudimentary math. Even Rider fans can do rudimentary math. 10 plus 6 is more than 13. So those two interceptions were absolutely massive.
Yeah, and, you know, in the last game, John White really had a big game against the Ticats. And this previous game, you know, he was only held to – he only had four carries.
He got hurt early, though.
Oh, that's right. And then they had Wayne Moore in there. Yeah, that young kid. Yeah, never mind. But either way, they held both the running backs to under 100 yards. So that's not too bad.
No, and combined, they had, 89 yards on 13 carries. I mean, the BC running attack was – pretty good in this one, but when you're they were down at one point by 10, you got to start kind of slinging it. So, I mean, I'm still a little concerned about this run defense. Like, Wayne Moore kind of looked like the second coming of Jerome Messam in this one, and this kind of dovetails nicely into the last kind of piece of the defensive puzzle I want to talk about here, and that was sloppy tackling. I felt there were a lot of missed tackles, a lot of BC players bouncing off tackles. You go down the list of yak for the Lions, and it's everybody except for Ryan Langford and Deron Carter had double-digit yak. And you see Wayne Moore, 59 yak on 60 yards receiving. So you see stuff like that, and it kind of makes you go, okay, the tackling wasn't too great in this one.
To be fair, though, I think that tackling across the league has become a little sloppy. I don't know if that has anything to do with the less contact in practice. I don't know. But I guess you're taught to tackle since you're in little league football. So, yeah, the tackling needs to improve if we want to. You know, even though we kept the team to 10 points, it could have been a lot worse for the BC Lions.
There's one other thing I want to touch on. It just came to me talking about this because I saw a lot of it as I was running the Podski account, obviously interacting with fans. Even though it was a late game out east, there was a lot of people that stayed up to watch it. I saw a lot of criticism of Justin Tuggle and how the Ticats could probably use to make a change at the middle linebacker position, either find someone out there to play that position or make a change internally. Where do you kind of stand on this? Because I thought Tuggle's had an okay season, but I feel like I think people are looking for him to be another Larry Dean, and I feel like that's not necessarily what his role is in this defense. I won't say that he hasn't struggled at some points. I think some of the running, the lack of a decent run defense kind of falls on his shoulders a little bit. But I feel like with the total talent on this defense that you don't need to have that like stud middle linebacker. I mean, if there is a way to improve any position on this team, quite frankly, I think the Ticats should try to do it 8-2 or not. But I don't know if I'm fully on the replace Tuggle bandwagon yet. What about you?
No, I'm not there yet either. I think the kid shows a lot of flashes of talent. I think that with more time, he will improve. And I think it's just too early to pull the plug on him yet. I like his style of play. I think he's a very aggressive player. You know, but he's a young guy, so it's going to take some time. So I'm not ready to replace him yet. If they have a stud middle linebacker out there that they can bring in and it'll be under the salary cap and all that good stuff, then go for it. But if not, then I'd just ride with this guy.
And I think some people should remember that the Rico Murray interception was caused because Justin Tuggle came in on a blitz and absolutely pulverized Mike Riley. So, I mean, there's a lot of people out there giving the guy a little bit of a hard time, but he's made some plays in this defense, and he made a couple in this one. Speaking of making plays, Mike, our Podsky Player of the Week this week, I think it should come as no surprise to anyone who watched the Lions and the Ticats this week, but why don't you tell everyone who we're bestowing that award on this week?
The Podsky Player of the Week is none other than Dylan Wynn. He had 4 defensive tackles and 3, count them, 3 quarterback sacks.
1, 2, 3. I'll never do that
very
again.
Good.
I'll
very never do good. That again, very good. But yeah, he's been a stud all year long, as we talked about earlier on in the podcast. So this week it's Dylan Wynn. It's well deserved.
And in a bit of serendipity, it also coincides with Wynn being named a CFL top performer for this past week. And shockingly to me, not because he doesn't deserve it, but because you rarely ever see the CFL really hand out these types of awards to defensive players, he was named one of the top performers for the month of August. Definitely deserved. I think as seeing the numbers, he had 6 of his 8 sacks this month. So clearly he has been on a bit of a tear here. So he gets the trifecta. He gets the CFL top performer of the week, CFL top performer of the month, and of course, the most prestigious honor, Podsky Player of the Week.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Forget about those other 2 awards.
The only thing this that is the one that matters.
Yes, we all know it.
So we don't have any Ticats news to talk about this week, but last week we did throw up – we got a question for ourselves from Claudio, one of our listeners, and he asked us which team we thought was better, the 2015 version of the Ticats or the 2019 version. So you and I batted that around back and forth, and we decided, hey, let's put that up on a poll and see what – some of the listeners of our show think. And it got a fair amount of responses and it got a lot of votes. So the final tally, and I wonder if maybe this is a little bit of recency bias, but I mean, we ended up kind of siding this way too. 62% of the vote went with this year's version of the Ticats. Well, 38% went with 2015, a sampling of some of the answers. 2019, when Zach went down in 2015, the whole team fell apart. When Jeremiah went down this year, the team has rallied, and I feel a lot more confident in all aspects of the game. That comes from Tiger Sammy. Troy said, this year's team. Zach was the most dominant player in 2015 by a wide margin, which really drove the Ticats, but they are a more rounded group this year and have way more depth. They've had a ton of injuries, and you've barely been able to notice past Mazzoli. Evans is also much better than Matthews or Corey Harris ever were. Claudio himself answered the question. Depth-wise, especially with Canadians, it's just so good this year. Guys stepping in and making plays. Plus, I think the mindset of this team is much different than 2015, and it starts with our head coach. Just a lot. The one that I found most interesting, it was our buddy Adam, who's contributed a ton. He said, I think the 2014 team was the best Ticats team over the past decade. Injuries to Caleros, Gable, Ellingson derailed the regular season, and they came up one penalty short of winning the Grey Cup. Started 1-6 because of the Caleros injury, then went 8-3 and blew out Montreal in the playoffs. So that's just a sampling. We got a number. Everyone who responded, thank you very much. Everyone who voted, thank you very much. So, Mike, what are you thinking? You sticking with this year's team, or are you swayed to maybe go with 2015? Or are you kind of, now that Adam brought up the 2014 squad, maybe you want to sneak them in there? What do you think?
I'm still going to stick with my guns and say this year's team. I just think the amount of depth on this team, Canadian depth, American depth, whatever depth, Mexican depth, Portuguese depth, whatever, wherever the players come from, we have a lot of it. So 2015 team was great in the regular season up until the injury. The 2014 team was also a pleasure to watch. I it's tough for me to say, but I'm going to stick with the 2019. I just think they have better things destined for them.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this team feels – I think what the overall – I think we talked about this last week. This feels like a more complete team. This feels like a team we've seen the offense struggle and the defense step up. We've seen the defense struggle and the offense step up, and that includes with and without Jeremiah Mazzoli. People might forget that just a couple of weeks ago, the defense gave up 34 points to these BC Lions, and the offense came down and won that game for them. So it's not like this has all been defense and Evans and the offense have been hanging around. It's been tougher, offensively speaking, but I feel like this team is definitely deeper than the 2015 squad, and I think that kind of starts at quarterback and then permeates itself the rest of the roster. The one thing that I took from all this is when Adam was like, they went 8-3 to end the season, and then I was like, man, I think they started 8-3 the following season. They went 16-6 over 22 games. We were really spoiled then.
Yeah, they just didn't have the
they win the Grey Cup. The
finish. Yeah, it's, you know, it's always good having a great regular season, but it just doesn't feel the same if you don't win the whole thing.
I agree with you. Much of that sucks. I agree with you. Okay, so thank you to everyone again for participating in the poll and for giving us some great answers. You're giving us a nice little 5-minute chat about the Ticats when there was a dearth of news on the team this week as we head into Labor Day. What there wasn't, however, Mike, was a dearth of news when it comes to the league as the bombshell dropped, what was it, Monday or Tuesday, I think it was? Andrew Harris, Winnipeg's all-star, all-everything running back, suspended for 2 games for violating the league's drug policy. This was a shocker. What say you?
Yeah, it was a huge shock. You know, Andrew Harris has been such a really great running back in this league for so long, but then, you know, he's leading the league in rushing by a couple hundred yards. He's 34 years old. You know, looking back on it, it kind of makes you scratch your head. Maybe this was going on longer than we thought it was. I'm not sure. I have no idea whether he accidentally did it or was purposely taking whatever he was taking, some kind of steroid. But yeah, overall, it was a giant shock. You don't really see star players like that in the CFL getting hit for steroids.
Can we talk about the accidental thing? Because I've seen a lot of people jump to Harris's defense and say, well, the Andrew Harris I know, which you don't know because you're a fan and you think you know these guys, yep, he would never do something like this. And I stand with Andrew Harris. And this isn't just Bombers fans saying this. This is fans from across the league. And it made me wonder if are people jumping to Harris's defense because he's, you know, quote unquote, one of us. He's a good old Canadian boy, and a Canadian boy would never. It's like, you hear about how there can't be a drug problem in hockey. There would never be a drug problem in hockey because they're good. It's all good old Canadian boys, and they would never do something like that. And to me, that's horse shit. And yeah, I feel like people are jumping to Harris's defense because of, like, are more apt to jump to his defense because, you know, he's a good old Canadian boy. If this was John White or James Wilder Jr. or Cameron Marshall, you know what I mean? Like, if this was just some run-of-the-mill American running back, would people be as apt to go, well, I believe Andrew Harris?
That's a tough question. I think that has something to do with it. You know, the Canadian kid, the squeaky clean image that he's had over all these years. You know, he's a hardworking guy. He's a team player, all that good stuff. And, you know, people that might have met him, he was probably a very nice guy to them. People think they know who he is, but they really don't. I mean, once he goes home, you know, all bets are off, okay? Anyone can have a nice public persona, a nice public image, and then go home and be, you know, not, you know, a cheater or not a good person. Not saying he's not a good person, but, you know, you just don't know. You know, just by your interactions with him, you know, you might have talked to him for a couple minutes. It kind of bothers me that people think that just because they talk to him, they know that he didn't cheat. It's, you know, maybe he just wanted to get ahead. It's a tough situation. I don't know what happened, but I'm not going to say just because he's a good old Canadian boy, he would never do this. No way.
Well, if I was to ask you, name me an athlete who didn't say that, oh, this is not in my nature. I must have taken a tainted supplement. Like, that's right out of the caught with your hand in the cookie jar, caught doing steroids handbook, is it not?
Yeah, I've never positive test to be like, yeah, I did it, like right off the bat. So it's always denial until they run out of, you know, unless there's actual evidence right in their faces that, you know, they can't deny anymore. So, yeah, it doesn't surprise me that he has taken that route.
Do you think this taints his legacy?
I think a little bit. I mean, it's got to a little bit, because you just don't know if he's been doing this for a long period of time. You know, are all those numbers tainted now because he might have been taking steroids and just, you know, didn't get tested at the right time, so it didn't show up or whatnot. Those questions are coming up now because of this positive test. So, yeah, I think it does, you know, tarnish his legacy a little bit.
And I kind of wonder, because I'm sure you read the same things I read, where this test that he failed came like 10 days or 2 weeks or something after he was randomly selected for a test before that. And it makes me wonder if he was tested and then goes, okay, I've been tested, I'm not going to be tested again, and then started doing this. And then when it was, you're being tested again, it's like, oh, crap, what am I supposed to – you know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how it feels to me.
Well, he's got to – you know, he's going to serve his two-game suspension unless he appeals or whatever. So I'm sure that they'll be testing him further, you know, throughout the season now. Well, I guess it's random, right?
But it is.
So.
But I would think, and maybe this is just me, but I would feel like in this scenario, if you flunked a drug test, that maybe for you it shouldn't be so random. Like, not that it should be like regulated and like every 3 months we're going to test you, or every, you know, 6 weeks or whatever it is. But I feel like if there's some sort of like random name generator, his name should be weighted a little bit more, because, and I think that's for anyone who's been busted using performance enhancing drugs. And let's get ahead of this right now, because I'm sure someone's going to bring it up. Brandon Banks, a couple of years ago, was suspended 2 games for taking drugs. He wasn't taking steroids. He wasn't taking PEDs. He was taking essentially ecstasy, and that's a banned substance, and he was suspended for that. I don't want to see people comparing the two. I don't want to see people jumping on us about, well, you know, your guy did it, blah, blah, blah. And Brandon Banks served a suspension, and he hasn't tested positive for anything else since. So, I mean, Andrew Harris maybe should be tested a little bit more if this is something that he's like, it's especially because it's for a performance enhancer. It's not like he was busted, like, not like Andrew Harris was busted for taking cocaine or heroin, or, you know, I mean, if you can play football on heroin, he's one hell of an athlete, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not like it was a recreational drug. This was literally something you would take to aid in your performance in your sport.
Yeah.
So I feel like maybe he should be singled out and tested more often, even in a system that is supposedly random.
Yeah. And I saw some things about Brandon Banks today on Twitter, and it's like,
not the same.
He wasn't taking ecstasy like 10 minutes before the game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not something you do. He was taking it leisurely, you know, when he was having fun. It had nothing to do with his performance on the field at all.
And the CFL doesn't test for marijuana, and I could be wrong, and maybe I am. I'm not sure they test for cocaine either. So, like, there are certain, like, recreational drugs that the league doesn't care that you use. But, like, you know, and I'm not defending Brandon Banks. I'm sure I know all those years ago you and I talked about this on the show, and I'm sure we said, like, hey, you know, he did them. He deserves suspension, even if we don't. Like, you and I won't say we're – I mean, maybe you're a little pro-drug. I wouldn't say we're, like, do drugs, but you and I don't tend to be as puritanical about this stuff. But performance enhancers, to me, is different. You know what I mean? Like, if a guy in the Ticats got busted for taking steroids, I feel like we'd have a bit of a different response than if it was a guy was busted on the Ticats like Brandon Banks was for taking ecstasy.
Right. And I'm not pro-drug. I just feel like – people should do whatever they want to do.
As long as you're not harming someone else, why does it matter?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, hard drugs are a terrible, terrible thing. But if that's your choice, that's your choice. You're an adult. You can make your own decisions. Do what you want. That's my feelings on it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's move on from this and get away from Andrew Harris and drugs. And let's talk about the other three games of the last week of the CFL season. The first game of the week, Winnipeg beat Edmonton in the first game without Matt Nichols. And they did so with a quarterbacking performance that was my boy John Hodge over at Three Down called it Tim Tebow-esque. I'll stick in the CFL and I'll call it Steven Giles-esque. It was what, like 89 yards passing? I think Chris Drevler had more yards rushing than he did passing in this game. And if he didn't, it was really close. He reminded me in a lot of ways of a quarterback that I actually really liked with the Ticats, which was Dan LeFevre. I think LeFevre was a bit of a better – I mean, he was a lot better. But LeFevre had a couple 300-yard passing games with the Ticats. So my question is to you, Mike, is Chris Drevler like Dan LeFevre 2.0 but just not as good?
I think so. I mean, the Bombers are going to be in some trouble if they're running that offense every week. Defenses are going to figure that out pretty quickly. So Strebler needs to improve his passing game. That's the bottom line. He just can't be running the ball, handing the ball off on every play. So if the Bombers want to get some wins coming up, he's going to have to be better.
What was he, 7-for-17 in this one? I think it was something like that. Okay. It's not sustainable. Running an offense like this just isn't sustainable. And Chris Streveler's out there leading, like lowering his shoulder, and that's going to get the guy injured. You just I know he's a big dude and he's a tough dude. You just can't take a pounding like that at the quarterback position. They're already down Matt Nichols. If they lost Chris Streveler, who they're high on and a lot of, you know, Bomber fans are high on, they lose him. They're down to a guy. I want to say his name's Sean McGuire. A third-string quarterback's never taken a snap in a CFL game, so they'd be in a lot of trouble if Strevler went down. I just don't see how you can sustain this type of offense for a long period of time. One game, no. Two games, maybe. No. 6, 7, 8, no chance.
No, and especially when you get to the playoffs. They're going to have to figure something out. I don't know when Matt Nichols is supposed to be coming back. They're at 4-6 weeks, so they better hope that he gets back in the lineup before the playoffs start.
Well, let's not forget, we saw Chris Drevler last year, and he looked great against the Montreal Alouettes when the Alouettes were a turd fire. No, that's not a saying. I think I just made it up. But then I know he played the Ticats here, and he played okay, but the Cats beat him. And I think he lost his other star, which I wish I could remember who it was, but I don't. We kind of know what quarterback he's going to be. Like, he hasn't seen a lot of the field, but it's always been in these run packages, these like doing these sweeps or these wildcat style offense, which it's not a wildcat if the quarterback's behind center, but that's, you know, that sort of like read option type stuff that the Bombers have done with him in there. To me, as like a, you know, take it by surprise, like package, sure. I think that can work sometimes. As an offense that they're going to try to run for the next, well, now what, maybe 5 weeks? I don't see how that the Bombers can continue to win playing that type of football, especially now with Andrew Harris. Andrew Harris is going to miss the next two games. So now you got a running back there that's not even as good as him. They play the Riders the next 2 weeks with Harris out. Are the Riders even going to really pay attention to the running back? They'll probably just tee off on Strevler.
Yeah, and he can't. They don't have a running game, it seems, with the loss of Harris. And now they don't have a passing game either. So it's going to be, I think they're going to be in tough these next two games against the Rough Riders. The Rough Riders seem to be a pretty good football team right now. So the Bombers might be, you know, that Western Division race for first place could get pretty damn interesting if the Bombers lose these next two games.
Speaking of the Riders, they hosted the Red Blacks and pasted the Red Blacks in this one. Ottawa's just as bad as we thought they were. What was the final? I think the final was like 40-18. And I think the big story coming out of this one is the Dominic Davis experiment in Ottawa has got to be over, right? What was it, 3 interceptions on 3 straight drives? I mean, I know Jonathan Jennings isn't exactly the savior or, you know, the second coming, but, I mean, it's time to turn the reins over to him, no?
Yeah, I think so. I've been pretty low on Jonathan Jennings over the last couple of years, but he can't be any worse than what Dominic Davis was. Those interceptions were ugly. Jonathan Jennings came in and actually played okay. I think this is his team from this point on.
And does it feel weird to you, or do you feel like as we sit here today, we kind of know the 6 playoff teams, who they're going to be? it looks to me like BC, Toronto, and Ottawa are going to be the teams on the outside looking in at the end of the year, no?
You'd have to think so, unless a miracle happens for, you know, Toronto or BC. Because, yeah, the other teams in the league are seem so far ahead of all those teams that I don't see any three of those guys catching up to the playoff contenders right now.
Yeah, like, even if Winnipeg kind of takes a tumble, I can't see them finishing worse. Like, even if the Bombers lost the remainder of their games, they finish 8-10. Do you think the Red Blacks are going to win 8 games? Do the Red Blacks have, what are they, 3-7? Do they have 5 more wins in them? I don't think so.
I don't think so either. To me, Ottawa's the worst team in the league right now. You know, BC has been bad. Toronto's been really bad. But Toronto has shown in the last couple of weeks that they can stick in games and they can produce offensively. Ottawa hasn't showed me that at all.
Yeah, I feel like with BC and with Toronto, there's like a glimmer of hope. It's a small glimmer, but there's a glimmer of hope. And Ottawa, it just seems like they started off 2-0 and everyone was bullish about them. And some people, myself included, were like, let's pump the brakes here a little bit. And since then, it's just been awful for the Red Blacks. I agree with you, Mike. I think they're the worst team in the CFL right now.
Yep. And speaking of Toronto, we had Touchdown Atlantic in Moncton, New Brunswick on Sunday morning for me, Sunday afternoon for the east side of the country. Did you see the game? What'd you think of it? What'd you think of the atmosphere? What'd you think of Touchdown Atlantic this year?
I saw a little bit of it. I went to Peach Fest, and I went to, which is in Winona, for those people who aren't in the Hamilton area. Winona's just a little town near Hamilton. Annually, at the end of August, they have a festival about peaches, and you go and you eat peaches and ice cream, and it's delicious, and it's awesome.
What about Pumpkin Fest, Josh? Have you ever heard of Pumpkin Fest?
Pumpkin Fest? Is that in that around here? Fest. Where's that?
No, it's in where I grew up, in Port Elgin. Big deal.
I have not heard of Pumpkin Fest. Yeah?
Yeah.
Happens around October time?
They bring all the pumpkins. They have the big pumpkin weighing
contest. Oh, I have heard of that.
Yeah? Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I went one year.
Big deal in where I'm from. Yeah, yeah.
Cool. But yeah, then I went to the Forge soccer game and watched, Forge FC, our local soccer team, beat Cavalry FC, our big rival from Calgary. We're not going to talk about soccer. I know you don't want to, but Forge is doing pretty good. Actually, when we're done recording this, I'm going to watch them play a late game down in Honduras, of all places. But I digress. So I saw a little bit of it. It was easily, from what I saw, the best game of the weekend. I've seen a lot of people say, like, oh, this is really going to rile up the East Coast to really push for a CFL team. And I'm like, let's not, you know, it's one game between two teams that don't play there. And it was a very exciting game, don't get me wrong. But let's, you know, pump the brakes on that a little bit. What do you think, though, as a guy who spent a lot of time out in the Maritimes? I know, and you, and for the record, we all know you've been very, I won't say negative, I think I'd say realistic about the prospects of a team existing out there. But I don't think this game's really going to make much of a difference in whether that happens or not. I'm assuming you agree with me on that one.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, if you go back to the first regular season Touchdown Atlantic they had, I believe the capacity was close to 20,000. The next one, it was 14,000. And then this one, they didn't even bother to add the end zone seats, so it was only around 10,000. It did end up selling out or very close to it. People seem to enjoy themselves. All that good stuff. It was a great game. That triple reverse or the flea flicker play kind of reminded me of the Hamilton play at the Touchdown Atlantic.
Yeah, I think he had that touchdown, I think, didn't he?
Yes, yep. So there was a lot of exciting play, a very exciting ending. I'm happy it was a good game, but I don't see it, you know, pushing it over the mountaintop of CFL fandom for the East Coast. You know, I'm sure lots of people watched and enjoyed it, but they have to get the stadium figured out, and then I'll talk about it.
All right, you got a bit of a rant here, Mike. You're ready to hand out a bozo of the week, so the floor is yours, my friend.
Well, there was the game, the NFL exhibition game in Winnipeg, as we all know about, between the Packers and the Raiders. A bit of a debacle, actually, a massive debacle. They didn't even play in the end zone. They had played on an 80-yard field, and I saw a lot of, you know, NFL only fans, you know, bashing the Blue Bombers, bashing the CFL. And the bottom line is the Blue Bombers just rented out their stadium. That's all they did. They didn't really have anything to do with it. The CFL most definitely didn't have anything to do with it. So for people that are blaming the CFL just because it's an easy target, you get my bozo of the week.
Yeah, anyone blaming the Bombers or the CFL for this disaster that occurred in Winnipeg, like 80-yard field, unsafe end zone, all that junk.
I mean, overpriced tickets, yeah, all that.
Lack of atmosphere. That's, you're looking, it's the typical people who just hate the CFL and want to talk crap about it. It's almost not even worth our time, to be honest with you. These people come out of hiding anytime that something like this happens, and then they go back into their sad lives and we never hear from them again. So good riddance. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Good riddance. You guys get my bozo of the week. And it's just, it was quite the scene in Winnipeg. That was quite the debacle. It was interesting to watch. That's for sure.
An 80-yard field. Could you imagine though, if that was the CFL that happened to, the hot takes and the ripping of it. And honestly,
they didn't even,
the NFL deserves all the junk it's getting, and the CFL would too, if it happened, to be quite honest with you. But man, oh man, from some of the talking heads, the stuff that would be said would have been just out of this world.
Yeah, it would have been, the biggest debacle in the history of debacles. But since it's, you know, related to the NFL, it's not that big a deal, and it's the CFL.
It's the CFL fault anyway.
Yeah.
All right, what's not the CFL's fault, Mike, and what is something that we can get super excited for is the annual Labor Day Classic. That is the next game on the schedule, and I know I said it a little while ago. I said it last week, actually. I can't believe we're at the midseason part of the season. Mike, I can't believe we're already at Labor Day. Like, what the hell? Where did the time go?
Yeah, basically didn't have a summer here. It's, you know, the weather's been just garbage the whole summer. It's, I have done nothing, but anyways.
Mike, let's talk about Labor Day. My summer sucked. All right. Well, good point.
Yeah, but I'm always looking forward to Labor Day, obviously. You know, it doesn't matter that the Argos are 1-8 or 1-9 or whatever they are, and the Tiger Cats are sitting atop the division. The rivalry is still there. The game still matters. And, the Calgary-Edmonton games are going to be very exciting to watch because of their close proximity in the standings. And also, of course, the Winnipeg-Saskatchewan games. Those two games are, going to be interesting for, you know, team fans outside of their teams. Like a Hamilton fan will enjoy the Winnipeg-Saskatchewan game and the Calgary-Edmonton game.
Yeah, it's weird. Records never matter on Labor Day. But usually we say that because the Ticats are, 1-8.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the Argos are, 6-2 or whatever. It's not often that we see the reverse. And people say, oh, anything can happen on Labor Day. And I've seen a lot of people out there going, like, could the Argos pull off the upset? They're getting a little better in this one. I mean, anything is possible. And I – look, last week I was like, I don't know about this BC game. And we tend to have that air of caution around us when it comes to talking about the upcoming games. But I got to be honest with you, Mike. This feels like the Ticats are going to win this going away. Like, as good as the Argos might be, their defense is not that good. I feel like the Ticats, especially with that offensive line, like, I don't think Dane Evans is going to be under pressure at all in this game. I think he's going to have a ton of time to make his reads. I think Brandon Banks is going to have a huge game. And I think this defense is going to eat. I think Dylan Wynn is going to get another sack or two. I think Garrett Davis is going to be in McLeod Bethel Thompson's face all game. Like, I just don't see any scenario. And look, we could come back here next week, could be totally wrong, and the Argos won the game. But heading into it, man, I just don't see how this doesn't end with the Ticats at 9-2. I really, really don't.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. I think that the Argos will put up a fight. I think it will be a close game, but in the end, talent will prevail, and the Tiger Cats have an immense amount of that, especially compared to the Argonauts. So I think in the end, the Tiger Cats will pull this out, but it will be a tight game, I think.
Like, is there any positional group for the Argos that you can say is head and shoulders better than that same positional group for the Ticats. Like, maybe, maybe you say because of experience, you take their quarterbacks over Hamilton's right now. But outside of that, it's check marks are all down the Hamilton column as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, every single position group I would give to Hamilton now. I'm not looking at the players from Toronto right now, but it just, you know, I think that the defensive line, the offensive line are obviously better. Receiving core, running backs are kind of a wash maybe, but I'd still give the edge to the Tiger Cats.
Gee, I wonder why you would give the edge to the Tiger Cats at running back.
Well, he's not even playing.
I like how you say he, as if like everyone knows who you're talking about.
Yeah, Mr. James Wilder Jr. Kind of fallen off the map this year. So I guess, you know, it's tough when your offensive line isn't opening up any holes. He's a talented running back. I'll give him that, but he's had a terrible season, and obviously he's you know, apparently he's been injured, but I don't know about that. He's been held off the starting roster for a couple weeks now.
You know what my favorite thing about this year's game is? It's at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, not 6 o'clock at night. So if there's a massive weather delay, I'm okay with that because I'll just hang out at the stadium during the afternoon and into the evening as opposed to being there until goddamn midnight. I loved what the Ticats did when they did the football day in Hamilton stuff, and they had the Mac and U of T game a couple of years ago in the afternoon, followed by the Ticats game in the evening. And they've done some Hamilton Hurricanes games in the past and had them before the Labor Day game. And I love how they've kind of made Labor Day into kind of a celebration of Hamilton football. But man, oh man, am I happy that this game is back at 1 o'clock. I'll go to this game, watch this, come home, catch like late in the first quarter to the end of the game for the Battle of Alberta. And it's going to just be a great holiday Monday of football for me.
Yeah, it just seems right that it's back at 1 o'clock. You know, growing up, it was always afternoon game, early afternoon game, and then you'd watch the Western game. It's just, it seems right that they put it back to 1 o'clock.
It really, really does. So, I mean, as we sit here a week out, actually it's less than a week out. We're sitting here recording on Thursday. Mike, the Ticats are 8-2, which means they're 2 wins away from you having some nice, smooth legs. You've mentally prepared for this, right? Because you know it's going to happen.
Absolutely. From the knee down, though, of course.
Oh, no. I was thinking from the junk down.
Yeah, the junk down. Oh, God. But, yeah, now I'll be embarrassed enough to whip out my chicken legs. But I'm pretty much given into the fact that it's going to happen.
Well, as long as you've given into it. And, look, as long as the Ticats keep winning, I think you'll be happy to have those calves of yours nice and bald.
Yeah, and plus I'll be more aerodynamic. So
yeah, for when you swim?
Yes. Biking, perhaps? I don't know.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think of that. Do you bike?
Yeah. No.
So you'd be more aerodynamic for something. We'll come up with the activity for you at a later date, but we'll make sure that you put your nice, smooth legs to good use.
All right. Sounds good, my friend.
All right. So that was Podski Weaver for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Argos suck.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.